WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What's going on, good people? Welcome to Current Sports on this beautiful Monday. As always, on each and every Monday, we have a lot to recap from this weekend's sporting action, including California Chrome, who comes up just a bit short of that Triple Crown dream. The NBA and NHL finals are underway and getting a bit interesting. We'll chat about that. The Detroit Tigers, are they back on track after a pretty solid series against the Boston Red Sox? Also, pick a Monday right around the corner. All of that and so much more. But before we get to all of the action, don't go anywhere because here are your current sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Matthew Ludke, and these are your current sports quick hit headliners for today, Monday, June 9th. The Detroit Tigers took a step in the right direction this weekend, taking two out of three games from the Boston Red Sox. The Tigers snapped the five-game losing streak on Friday with a 6-2 home win. They then continued their winning ways with an 8-6 victory on Saturday. The Tigers would fall in the final game of the series yesterday, a 5-3 Boston win. The Tigers now hit the road to play a four-game series against the division rival Chicago White Sox. The Tigers currently hold a three-game lead in the AL Central. In college football news, Detroit Cass Tech running back Mike Weber, ranked as the number 10 tailback in the class and a four-star recruit by rivals, tweeted Sunday that he would be in Ann Arbor for an unofficial visit. He is being heavily pursued by Michigan State and Ohio State in addition to the Wolverines, and Weber tweeted a photo of himself with former Cass Tech teammate and current U of M redshirt freshman, offensive lineman David Dawson, on the visit. At the Belmont Stakes, so much for making history. Heavily favored California Chrome failed Saturday to complete horse racing's Triple Crown, finishing the Belmont Stakes tied for fourth place behind winner Tonalist. Commissioner and Medal Count finished second and third, respectively. And California Chrome's co-owner, Steve Coburn, is taking heat for saying after the race that the winner's owners took the, quote, coward's way out, end quote, by skipping the first two races to compete fresh at the Belmont. Asked by ABC News Sunday whether he would recant the accusation, Coburn remained defiant, saying, quote, not only no, but hell no, I do not regret it one bit, it's the truth, end quote. He did apologize for his two-day rant against the Belmont Stakes during an emotional interview with ABC's Good Morning America, saying he, quote, wanted to apologize to everyone associated with Tonalist and all the horse racing world. Very ashamed of myself, he went on to say. Very ashamed. I need to apologize to a lot of people. In the NBA, the AC was on, but the Spurs couldn't cool down the heat, losing Game 2 of the Finals 98-96. LeBron James roared back after cramps took him out of Game 1, scoring 35 points and grabbing 10 rebounds to tie the series at one game apiece. Tony Parker scored 21, while Tim Duncan added 18 and 15 for the Spurs, who were shut down in the final 2 minutes as Miami stole home court advantage. Game 3 is Tuesday night in South Beach. In the Stanley Cup Finals, no lead is safe, especially against the LA Kings. Los Angeles rallied from 2-0 and 4-2 deficits to win Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals 5-4 in double overtime. Dustin Brown scored the game winner, redirecting Willie Mitchell's shot halfway through the second overtime period. Henrik Lundqvist made 39 saves for the Rangers, who head home to Madison Square Garden trying to climb out of a 2-0 series deficit. Game 3 is tonight at 8 p.m. Another year, another French Open title for Rafa Nadal. The Spaniard claimed his fifth straight French Open championship and ninth overall, besting rival Novak Djokovic 3-6, 7-5, 6-2, 6-4. Nadal now has 14 Grand Slam titles, tying him for second with Pete Sampras, trailing only Roger Federer's 17. On the women's side, Maria Sharapova won her second French Open in 3 years, beating Simona Halep 6-4, 6-7, 6-4 for her fifth Grand Slam title. In NASCAR news, Dale Earnhardt Jr. won the race at Pocono over the weekend. Earnhardt Jr. zoomed past Brad Keselowski with 5 laps remaining to hold on and seal the deal for the win. It's the second victory for Earnhardt Jr. this season, his last win at the well-known Daytona 500. It's the first time he's won multiple races in the same season since 2004. In NCAA news, the trial begins today that will decide whether the NCAA must pay college athletes for their role in television broadcasts, video games, and other consumer products. This comes after more than 5 years of maneuvering and planning from athletes and others in support. There are more than 12 lawyers and 1,300 court documents since 2009. And in other sports video game news, controversial cornerback and NFL star Richard Sherman has been voted to be on the cover of Madden 15. The vote was decided by fans in a bracket-style format with 16 other NFL players. 10 million fans voted on the cover, choosing Sherman as the spokesman. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners for today, Monday, June 9th. We'll send it back to Al to start the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt. Appreciate that. Man, oh, man, has a lot happened this past weekend in the world of sports. And, man, am I honored that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon on this beautiful Monday to talk about all of it. Now, folks, we're going to open up our phone lines throughout this entire hour for you to call in and give your thoughts on anything. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. 9527. You know, something else I saw in the paper this morning, I'm pretty sure many of you saw around the area if you read the Lansing State Journal. On the front page of the sports page, written by a current sports friend, Chris Solari, he has a pretty cool article when it comes to two MSU basketball players. Now, Keenan Wetzel and Delvon Rowe, of course, Delvon, a former MSU basketball player, Keenan Wetzel, a current MSU walk-on basketball player. And those two are actually, you know, collaborating on a pretty cool film. Yes, film, folks. A short film, that is, this summer, titled The Cager, which they hope the blockbuster collaboration sparks their movie careers. Now, Wetzel, he plans to finish his undergraduate degree in media and information this summer and has a season of eligibility remaining. He wrote the 23-page script over the past year and will direct the film. And the 22-year-old is not taking a salary. Now, Rowe is now a professional actor based in Los Angeles. I'm pretty sure if you turned on your TV, you've probably seen him on a few commercials here and there. He has been featured on Tosh.0 as well, and some smaller parts in the films of, quote, Love and Honor and Abducted. Now, Wetzel's 25-minute short film will be his first leading role. So congrats to them. You know, that's a good story of just two guys just following their dreams and passions right there. Delvon Rowe has always been a guy who has wanted to, you know, break into the world of acting, and he certainly is having quite the career so far to start off out in L.A. chasing his acting dreams. And who knows? I had no idea that Keenan Wetzel was quite the director and actor himself. So pretty cool stuff. Again, that's on the front page of the Lansing State Journal. Chris Solari wrote a pretty good feature there, and you should check it out. It's really interesting stuff, folks. But man, oh man, do we have a show for you. Well, I'll tell you what, Alex was right when it came to California Chrome. Of course, Matt and I, we really based our predictions based on hope more so, if anything. Really hoping that this horse, California Chrome, would pull off the Triple Crown. But as you just heard from Matt and our current sports quick hit headliners, California Chrome came up a little short of that dream. So much for making history, folks. But I tell you what, the owner of California Chrome, his name is Steve Colburn. He had an interesting take and an interesting rant, as you just heard from Matt, about the whole thing, the whole ordeal about California Chrome coming up short and just the overall essence of horse racing and why we haven't seen a Triple Crown winner since the 70s. And, you know, he had an interesting take on it, as you just heard from Matt. He felt as though that the winner's owners, of course, Tonalist, he took the coward's way out. Interesting stuff. And you actually, in just a second, because we're going to dive into this discussion and as to why Steve made these comments. You'll get to hear from Steve himself because this rant was recorded on video live right after the race happened on NBC on Saturday, and you'll get to hear the rant that Steve gave and the reason as to why he said and felt as though Tonalist took the, quote, coward's way, end quote. Interesting take on it, and you'll get to hear all of our opinions on it. And also, how about LeBron James and Miami Heat in a game that I thought the Spurs just kind of handed the Miami Heat a win? It was an unbelievable performance by LeBron coming back from what many are dubbing to be called his cramp gate, as Eric Spoelstra, head coach of Miami Heat, called it. Of course, by LeBron catching cramps in game one and going out, and the Spurs taking advantage of that and winning game one. But the Heat had an answer in game two, and it was a loud one, to say the least. So we'll talk about that. Also, the NHL Finals, as the LA Kings have now taken a 2-0 NHL playoff lead. That and so much more, folks. You don't want to miss any of it. Again, we'll take your calls throughout this entire hour on anything you want to talk about. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. And the Tigers, folks. The Detroit Tigers, of course, they get a weekend series win over the Boston Red Sox. They closed things out with a loss, though, yesterday. But, hey, it's a series win nonetheless. They win the first two games of that series on Friday and Saturday. And it makes you wonder now if the Tigers are starting to get back on track. I want to get your thoughts on that, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at AlMartinWKR. I also remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV is live and back in full effect this week. That's right, on Wednesday night, I'll be sitting down with a Spartan hoop legend, folks. Martin Cleaves, yes, the famed point guard and the man who many regard in the land of the green and white to be the greatest MSU basketball leader to ever grace the hardwood, okay? Martin Cleaves is going to sit down with me as he talks about his pretty cool camp that will be gracing many areas throughout the state of Michigan. We'll talk about that and also his career, being here back in this area, which he had so many great years with the MSU men's basketball team. We'll talk about that and his thoughts on the upcoming year for this year's MSU men's basketball team. You can see that and so much more by being a part of that live audience on Wednesday night at 6 p.m. by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. You don't want to miss any of that. I'm certainly excited to sit down with Mateen and pick his brain. But before we get to all of that, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Now, he is the president of the Lansing Curling Club, treasurer of the Great Lakes Curling Association, and event chair of the 2014 USA Curling Arena National Championships. Here he is to update us on all of the curling action from around this area and beyond. Mark McElwee, he's back, folks. How you doing, Mark?
Great, Al. It's great to be back. Thanks a lot.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot for joining me. So, Mark, of course, we had you. I just talked about Current Sports TV, and, you know, you're actually a part of that episode. I actually went out there during the, what was that, the winter time, I think?
Yep.
I think it was a bit chilly. I remember it being a little bit chilly outside.
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, around February. I came out there and got to try my hand at the sport and whatnot, and we had you on the TV show. It was a great episode, and thank you for joining us on that episode. I got to ask you, what you been up to since then, man? Again, that was February. It's now June now. What has Mark McElwee been up to?
I've been all over since then. We finished up our season, our fourth season over at the Summit with the Lansing Curling Club. I've been relieved of the presidency, so that's not a bad thing. I'm still treasurer, still vice president, still working on our membership.
Gotcha.
We had a huge boost from the Olympics, of course.
You did?
Yes, a huge boost from the Olympics in our membership. And so we were able to, for the last 5 weeks of our league in February and March, we were totally full. And we actually had to turn people away.
Wow, so, are you kidding me?
No, it's
that's unbelievable.
It is. It's fantastic.
How many? So when you talk about that huge boost, specifically, what numbers are we talking about now as far as the membership?
We more than doubled our membership. So at our final league was 32 curlers.
That's pretty good,
yeah,
Mark.
Which is really good. And it's given us quite a boost. We're going to be able to offer a lot more next season, starting in the summer, even starting in a couple of weeks. And through the fall, we're going to offer some learn-to-curl packages where you'll get 3 weeks to try it out. If you like it, you can go right into a league. If you don't like it, then you're done. So, you know, we'll want to expose as many people as we can to the sport. And that's part of the mission of the club.
Mark, did you guys anticipate the big membership boost at all? And you guys knew it would grow. Because I remember talking to you around February and saying that the Olympics really put a target on the sport of curling and really pique a lot of people's interest. But did you think it would, did it eclipse your expectations looking at your membership now?
It absolutely did exceed our expectations. We offered one free Learn to Curl event, which we could fund through some grant money that we received from USA Curling and the Darwin Curtis Foundation. And we utilized those funds to purchase ice time and equipment and offered it for free. And over 250 people attended that 2.5-hour event.
That is unbelievable. That's remarkable.
And then to top that off, you're talking about almost 10% retention.
Right.
Which is unprecedented. Usually you get maybe 5% retention on something like that, an event that you run.
Wow.
So to get 10% saying, hey, I really want to do this, and they're fanatics. It's great.
That is great.
Yeah, they're into it. Yeah, the new kids are a lot of fun.
And folks, I got to tell you, if you have not tried the sport of curling, I had a great time being out there and getting, you know, a one-on-one lesson from the man himself. It was a great time. If you haven't tried the sport of curling, it's something you have to do before you die. I'm telling you, folks. Now, you know, looking at the Olympics, just to talk about the Olympics real quick, sure. Mark, before we hit the air, I want to just verify this with you. Canada taking gold medals in both the men and women's championships. Unbelievable stuff. Is Canada, I got to ask you, looking at that, is Canada head above heels just better than the rest, or is that, was that a shock to you?
No, that's not a surprise at all. The Canadian men's and women's programs are very, very deep. Western Canada produces a lot of really, really good curlers. They have a lot of facilities. They have a lot of coaches. They have a high level of competition that these guys are playing at all of the time.
And why is that? Just in that
just,
area?
It's where the game really kind of got its roots in Canada was on the western part with the farmers, and you know, where they can't farm, they curl.
Right, right.
You know, once you're done, and that's when curling season starts, and the government supports a lot of individual provincial events and provincial championships.
Now, the United States, looking at, you know, how they finished in the Olympics this past year, they didn't finish with any medals. Was that a surprise to you at all? And how far back is the U.S. when trying to get to a level that Canada is in the sport of curling?
It's really tough. It's not even just Canada that you're fighting against now. Once upon a time, it was, oh, we got to be better than Canada. Well, shoot, now we've got to be better than Switzerland.
Right.
You know, I mean, these European countries are putting together teams with individuals. And the U.S., some of the higher-ups are looking at that model. It's nothing's been set yet, but they're tweaking the high-performance program to try to better meet the goals of the United States Olympic Committee, which is to medal. Don't just go show up, but to medal.
Right.
So it's something that is being worked on.
Now for you, Mark, looking at, you know, the Olympics that just took place this year, how cool and fun was it for you to watch a sport that you love and have a passion for have a target on his back and everyone viewing it on the national stage? How cool was that? It had to be pretty cool for you.
It's fantastic. It really is. You know, you could get home from work and turn on CNBC and there was curling on every day.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Are you
okay,
glued to it every day?
I watch it. You know, you're watching Korea versus Italy. You don't care.
Right.
You know, so it was great. It really is. It's a huge exposure for the sport. It's a good way to grow the game throughout our country. And I think that's how you get to be Canada, is because if you get the U.S. only has 15,000 curlers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but for a nation of its size, that's way out of proportion to what Canada has.
Right, right.
Just for example. So
exactly.
That's, in my estimation, that's the best way to grow the game. You deepen your own pool, and then the teams get better.
For you, such a curling enthusiast that you have been for years, watching, you know, events like that on the Olympic level, the national stage, I just said, mm-hmm. What do you learn from watching the Olympics? Did you learn anything?
Oh, you really learn a lot. You learn a lot about game management. You learn some good things and some things to avoid. You know, you learn some strategies that are interesting and other strategies that, you know, oh boy, I better not, you know, don't ever get myself in a position to give up 7 so they write it down in the record books.
Don't want that.
Happened to the women.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you learn what not to do and what to
sometimes,
do.
Sometimes, yeah.
There you go. You're constantly learning any sport, I always say, whether you watch it or whether you're playing it.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with a man who is a member of the Lansing Curling Club, treasurer of the Great Lakes Curling Association, and the event chair of the 2014 USA Curling Arena National Championships. Now, I got to ask you, Mark, you know, talking about that, because that is actually happening this week, right? The 2014 USA Curling Arena National Championships. Tell the people about it.
What it is the Arena National Championships is an event that was started by the United States Curling Association. Last year was the first event. It was held in Fort Wayne. This summer it's being held here in Lansing over at the Summit. Teams will come in from all across the country. There's 16 men's teams and 16 women's teams. So with 32 teams, that's one of the biggest tournaments ever held in the state, as far as I know.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot. We've got there'll be five games going on at a time. We've got teams from California, Pittsburgh, Carolina, all over the place.
Just everywhere. You know,
yeah,
that had
everywhere.
That had to be a big grab to host an event like this on a net. You talk about teams from California.
Yeah,
and
we
everywhere.
Really wanted to make a splash. This is only our second year in an arena.
Yeah.
You know, before we were renting ice from other clubs, so we really wanted to go ahead and make a splash. So when we put the bid in, you know, it was over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
We just decided we're going to go for it. And, you know, we saw Kalamazoo be successful doing that when they bid on the Nationals after they'd only been a club for 2 years. And so they got to host the real Nationals, and that was quite something. But the USCA only has 7 championships. So it's a big deal.
That is a huge deal.
It's a big deal.
This is by far the biggest curling championship that's ever been in the state of Michigan for quite some time?
Yes. Yeah, you know, the 1989, I believe, the Detroit Curling Club hosted the men's and women's nationals. But I'm not even sure how many teams were involved in that. So as far as sheer numbers, this might be it. It's a big deal. It really is. It's a great thing for our club. It's a great thing for our community. We've got a lot of people on board, great sponsors. The Greater Lansing Sports Authority, you'll see their footprint all over this thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've couldn't be more helpful. They're Megan and Mike are top notch.
You being the event chair, Mark, how did you pull this whole thing off?
Well, a lot of volunteers. I mean, our club members have really stepped up. The facilities people at the Summit, I mean, they're working right now over there, as far as I know. I got to get back over there by 3 o'clock. So I'm glad
the work never stops.
I'm glad it's just an hour show. It's just a lot of people coming together with a common goal. I mean, that's how things work.
Right,
you know, especially in the curling world. So, you know, we've got volunteer timekeepers that are coming in. I pretty much called in every favor I got. So
nice.
And this might be it.
There you go. Now, for you, Mark, it's happening June 11th through the 15th, which is this Wednesday and so on and so forth.
Yep.
How can people come out and view it? What's the attendance usually like for an event like this?
Well, the attendance for Arena Nationals last year was not very high. We're not expecting, you know, there to be a seating shortage of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it free to attend?
It's free, yeah. The admission is free. The games will start at 8 o'clock Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
8 a.m., 8 p.m.?
8 a.m.
8 a.m., gotcha.
8 a.m., and they'll run all day. The draw times are 8 a.m., 11 a.m., then 2 p.m., 5 p.m., and 8 p.m. So, you know, you can come by anytime, stay for part of a game, stay for a whole game. There will be Lansing Curling Club members around. If you have questions about what's going on the ice, they'll be happy to help you out, try to explain things to you. So we'll have a full complement of that.
There you have it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good – and oh, did I mention I'm playing in it?
You're playing in it as well. Oh, you got to be kidding me, Mark. You do it all. So you're chairing the event and also are part of the event.
Yep.
My goodness. That's unbelievable stuff. Well, we definitely wish you luck. And again, how can people keep up with the action if they just want to see how teams are doing? Is there a way they can do that online?
You can follow it on curlingzone.com. There'll be live scoring updates. Hopefully you'll have enough people to staff that, but I think we're going to be good there. So there's Curling Zone. You can follow the action at on Twitter at #2014ArenaNats. You can follow Terry Kolesar at Terry_USA Curl. She's the media director for USA Curling. You can also follow Lansing Curling Club.
There you have that.
At Lansing Curls.
I tell you what, I'm going to try to get a camera out there and, you know, definitely update the people on next week's Current Sports TV. How's that sound?
Perfect. That'd be great, man. We'll be there all weekend. Trust me.
Sounds good. Mark, hey, Mark, always a pleasure. You know, I love talking about different sports that go beyond your usual basketball and football. And, hey, curling is definitely one of those. And we certainly appreciate you today. We appreciate it, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Al. Appreciate
Thank you.
Man.
You take care, all right?
You too, buddy.
There you have it, Mark McElwee. He is a member of the Lansing Curling Club, treasurer of the Great Lakes Curling Association, and as you just heard, the event chair of the 2014 USA Curling Arena National Championships. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we have a ton to get to, including California Chrome coming up just a bit short, the Tigers, the NBA, and the NHL Finals, so much more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Luckey. You know what? We're changing up and revamping Current Sports a little bit here. And one particular area has to do with the music. And on Mondays, each and every Monday, we're dubbing it Martist Mondays. It's a clever play on words, folks. Martist Mondays, because each and every Monday, we're going to play a song. Each and every Monday, we're going to, in and out of our breaks, we're going to choose an artist and play that artist coming out and in and out of each and every break. And that artist's name has to start with an M. And today, it's Maroon 5. So you'll hear a lot of Maroon 5 throughout today's show. Thanks a lot, Alex, for cutting those songs. And Maroon 5 is such a great band. I'm a big fan of them. You know what? Just really quickly, before we dive into this whole California Chrome discussion, guys, I would be remiss if I did not announce this. Michigan State has added transfer guard Eran Harris. Yes, Eran Harris, it looks as though he has made his decision, folks. Again, he's a transfer from West Virginia, and based on a tweet from ESPN analyst Jeff Goodman, Harris will be heading to Michigan State. Now, not making the visit to U of M to even get the tour, especially when U of M was hosting a number of elite high school players at its college practice camp, indicates that he will be going to Michigan State. Now, the Indianapolis Stars' Cal Nederip tweeted this weekend that the decision is upcoming. Quote, expect Eran Harris to make a college decision on Monday, West Virginia transfer, Lawrence North grad, excuse me. So there you have that. Eran Harris will be coming to Michigan State, folks. You can expect some great things from him. I've looked at a few of his highlight tapes, Matt, and looks to be a solid guard, solid kid. So we'll see how his career pans out here. All right, well, happy Monday, guys. How was the weekend, Matt?
It was good. Too short.
It was too short. Alex, how was yours?
Too short for California Chrome, and the horse hype really holds true, Al. It really does.
Yeah, it definitely does. We'll dive into it. You know what, my weekend, guys, I tell you what, I was really excited on Friday because I told you guys I was going to Cedar Point. So I drive all the way to Cedar Point, right, and I get a call from a good friend of mine, my friend Johnny. He calls me up and says, Al, how close are you, man? Because right now it looks as though Cedar Point may be closed down. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I'm like 20 minutes away. I'm like, well, I'm going to see, because he saw an Instagram post from one of his friends, and they were telling people to leave. Something had happened. I'm like, really? So I go there, and lo and behold, security guards are out there saying, go the other way. Cedar Point is closed today. And I asked the security guard what's going on. They had a water main break at the park, and it shut down the park the entire weekend. Matt, when I tell you I was livid, livid is not the word. And you know, I asked the security guard, I'm sitting there like, okay, will they be open Sunday? And he's like, yeah, we'll be open Sunday. Next thing you know, I'm reading, you know, looking at their Twitter feed on Cedar Point, and they say, no, we're closed Sunday as well. So I wasted a trip to Ohio for absolutely nothing. Nothing, man. Oh,
yeah, that's rough.
It was tough. But hey, you live and you learn.
Bought tickets?
I had bought the tickets online.
You get a refund.
I got my full refund back. But I wasted money on the hotel, I tell you that. So, yeah. Eesh. Pretty bad. And
so,
gas.
So did you end up staying down there? We stayed
down there. You know, we caught a movie, you know, got some dinner, you know, went putt-putt golfing. You know, we made the most of it.
Al Woods, did you lose to your friend?
I had three holes in ones throughout the entire outing. Three holes in ones for me in putt. I take putt-putt serious, man. It was on. But yeah, we had a fun time. But yeah. All right, folks. Well, that was my weekend. Hopefully, you guys had a better weekend than me. But let's dive into California Chrome, who also didn't have an ecstatic weekend. Now, as you just heard, at the top of the hour, Matt listed our quick hit headliners. And California Chrome came up just a bit short. He was heavily favored to possibly win the horse racing's first Triple Crown in quite some time, since the 70s. And he ended up finishing fourth. Now, meanwhile, California Chrome's co-owner, Steve Colburn, he had some interesting comments as to the state of horse racing and as to why his horse didn't pull off the Triple Crown. Here's what he had to say.
It's been an incredible run for Steve Colburn and Perry Martin and all those with California Chrome. Throughout it all, Steve, it's been an amazing ride. What were your thoughts as they turned for home?
Well, I thought he was gaining ground, but he didn't have it in him, apparently. You know what? He's been in three. This is his third very big race. These other horses, they always set them out. They set them out and try to upset the apple cart. I'm 61 years old, and I'll never see, in my lifetime, I'll never see another Triple Crown winner because of the way they do this. It's not fair to these horses that have been in the game since day one. I look at it this way. If you can't make enough points to get in the Kentucky Derby, you can't run in the other two races.
So if you had your way, you would say you got to run the Triple Crown or you cannot come up in the Belmont and be a fresh horse.
That's right. It's all or nothing. It's all or nothing. Because this is not fair to these horses that have been running their guts out for these people and for the people that believe in them. For have somebody to come up like, this is a coward's way out, in my opinion. This is a coward's way out.
So you think they came right after your horse and that was the plan, just like they have other potential Triple Crowns?
Exactly. Our horse had a target on his back. Everybody else lays out one, or they won't run in the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness. They'll wait until the Belmont. You know what? If you've got a horse, run him in all three. If you've got a horse that can, that, Carolyn, if you've got a horse that earns points running the Kentucky Derby, those 20 horses that start in Kentucky are the only 20 eligible to run in all three races. This is the coward's way out.
Steve, I know it's a tough loss. We hope to see him down the road. All right, Tom. Obviously, strong statements here from the owner of California Chrome.
That again, that's the co-owner of California Chrome, Steve Colburn, right after his horse, California Chrome, came up just a bit short of the Triple Crown dream. Well, strong comments, Matt, from Steve. I was actually watching it live after we had got rejected from Cedar Point, went over to Applebee's and checked out the race. And I was on the, you know, everybody's glued to the television. And when it happened, we're sitting there just shaking our hands like, okay. Now, when Steve hit the mic, you know, I really not even thought about the entire field of horse racing and, you know, how many races that California Chrome's competition had. And I had the thought of, you know, having a California Chrome going against horses who had not competed at either the Kentucky Derby or at the Preakness and them racing in the Belmont, that did not even cross my mind. You know, it really sparked up an interesting conversation because I had not even fathomed to think about it. And it comes down to really, you know, the simple question on whether or not is it fair. Now, you know, looking at, you know, the wear and tear that a horse goes through, especially a horse who has a shot at winning the Triple Crown, you know, doing a little research here, there's a lot that goes into the preparation of just one race, especially one as such as the Belmont Stakes, which is the longest race of the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby in this whole Triple Crown, you know, feat. Now, looking at this, though, I want to ask you first, do you think it's fair for a horse who hasn't run in all three races to possibly run in the last one, which is the Belmont Stakes, to end the chances of a Triple Crown winner? What do you think about that?
I think in this case, it's fine because Tonalist only missed the Kentucky Derby because it had a throat infection. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're held out from injury or illness and you still qualify for the Belmont, why not? I do understand where he's coming from, though, where if you don't race in the first two, you shouldn't be allowed. But if it's for some sort of like medical issue and it's health related, I think it's fine. So I think his argument doesn't really hold a lot of water in this case. But just speaking generally, I tend to agree with him that if you're going to run in the Triple Crown, you run in the Triple Crown. You compete in all three events, not just, you know, handpicking the one that you want to potentially knock off a Triple Crown hopeful.
I totally agree with you, you know, because for me, the wear and tear that these horses go through, especially a horse who has a chance, who has won the Kentucky Derby, who has won the Preakness. I mean, that's a lot. You know what I mean? That's a lot to ask of a horse to come and, you know, just try to bring it each and every race. And for this horse to go against a few horses who have not run in those previous two, maybe one of them, you know, they're not fresh. They don't have fresh legs. Well, they have fresh legs compared to a California Chrome who has been running in all three. It makes you, it's really interesting. Now, since Affirm's win, who was the last Triple Crown winner back in 1978, 12 horses have entered the Belmont Stakes with a chance to win the Triple Crown. Now, none of those 12 horses have won. Of the 12 horses that played spoiler and won the Belmont with Triple Crown on the line, 9 have either skipped the Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes or skipped one of those two. So that's 9. We're talking about, that's more than half. More than half of the horses who have played spoiler to this whole Triple Crown, you know, dream have missed either one or both of the Kentucky Derby or Preakness Stakes. That's pretty alarming numbers, if you ask me, Matt. Alex, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, now, first glance, obviously, the typical sports fan doesn't know a lot about horse racing. None of us really knew a lot about it until this time period. We all had to do our research. And at first glance, when I heard these comments, the first thing I thought to myself is, that's an excuse. First thing I thought was, that's an excuse for his loss. Every horse should be prepared to race no matter what time of the day it is. No matter how many times you practice, you should be conditioned enough to race. But after looking and studying a little bit, in five or six months, you're racing about 3 huge races. And aside from that, you're practicing and going full speed by day by day by day. So when you think about it, and we saw this thing with LeBron James cramping, you think, well, he should be prepared to play. He should be ready no matter what the temperature is. And that's day in and day out. And baseball players play every day, so that's no excuse. But when it comes to horse racing, and after studying a little bit more, like you already have mentioned, this situation's a bit different. And I do agree with you guys that it is a little unfair after the grueling 5 months and 3 big races and the practices
injuries. 5 weeks.
Excuse me. Yeah. It's exactly what I meant to say. Five weeks.
Yeah.
With the practices and all that, it's a tough thing. And there's a reason why a throat injury keeps a horse out, because that little bit of a throat injury dictates a whole couple meters. So for me, I hear where he's coming from generally, just like what Matt said. Generally, when it comes to picking a horse and not racing in every race, it's really not fair. It's like saying that a team could come in, it's like saying that a team doesn't have to compete in the NBA playoffs and can just come in, get a couple bye weeks, and then start competing. You can compare it to other different sports. So in that regard, I agree with you guys.
Yeah, I definitely see his argument. Now, the reason why, you know, because I feel as though the majority of the population looking at this whole thing and looking at his rant, Steve's rant afterwards, they took it in a way that was pretty negative. You know, they said, oh, he's just, you know, those are sour grapes. Why is he lashing out like this? He should just say, hey, we lost it and keep it moving. But I understand, because he did come off, it was in a spurt of moment. It was right after the race. You come off angry sometimes. It's kind of like, it reminds me of the Richard Sherman rant. I mean, sometimes, you know, you come off, you're in the heat of the moment, the adrenaline is pumping, you could have made history here, and your emotions get the best of you. He could have said this in a way that didn't come off like he was lashing out, if you will. Because if you look at that bite, and after the interview, he turns over to, I think it may be his wife, and his wife is like, you know, calm down. He's like, no. You know, he's like, he's amped up.
No, you can hear him in that clip.
Yeah.
He. It seems like his wife is tapping him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Or the elbow. And you can hear him go, Carol. You know, he's like, you know, let me say this.
Carol, let me
speak
say this,
my
girl.
Mind. And then at the very end, you can hear him say, I don't care to
right.
his wife or to someone in the background.
Exactly.
So it's clear that his, you know, his team or, you know, his group
right.
was trying to diffuse the situation as it was happening.
Yeah.
Personally, I love it.
I loved it too. I'm not even going
to
hold you.
And you compare it to Richard Sherman, and he's even less prepared than a guy like Richard Sherman, who's going to be interviewed after every game he plays and ask
right.
tough questions. I mean, this is the biggest moment of his life, potentially. He could be, you know, the owner of a Triple Crown winning horse. He loses it in the Belmont at the very end. He had a chance in that last straightaway, and he just couldn't get it done. What do you expect? Do you think he's going to be super composed and you know, put together a nice, you know, conceding defeat? Like, no, that's not going to happen. I like that he had some fire. Infinitely more interesting than had he just given the stock, like, well, you know, Tonalus was just a better horse today. Like, nobody would care. We wouldn't be talking about it.
Right.
This at least adds some interest, and you make some good points.
He does. And you know what? Looking at this whole thing, and you know, this conversation has been had in the past, but not to this level because we've never had a co-owner of a Triple Crown, possible Triple Crown winner, come out and make these comments. And again, I didn't know that this was going on where horses who haven't competed, I thought the playing field was even, where all these horses who are competing in the Belmont have already previously competed in the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby. But that isn't the case, and it really opened my eyes to it. And it really makes you want to watch and does provide some debatable drama that I think is also healthy in a plethora of other sports. I mean, how many, we talk about the NFL and the whole concussion ordeal and the penalties. We talk about the terrible refereeing in the NBA, which makes that compelling to watch sometimes and makes you want to throw the TV out the window sometimes. This is an aspect to horse racing that really provides some added drama, which we all love in sports. We don't like sometimes the whole black and white, we know who's going to win, and kind of boring, you know, just kind of telegraph throughout the entire sport.
Yeah.
This provides some drama that I think is healthy.
Not just drama, but this provides conflict because you're speaking at the sport as a whole. You're talking about the commissioner at the top deciding who races and what and at the Belmont, at the Derby, and for each specific race. But big enough to the fact that you're seeing this guy come on Good Morning America in the morning, apologizing, and when Matt says his wife trying to pull him away, you don't let me speak my mind.
Carol, let me go.
and she's looking at him this morning saying, told you so. She's sitting there looking at him, smiling a little bit.
Always listen to the wifey, huh?
Yeah, it's you gotta listen to the women in your life. But
well, I tell you what, though, you know, it was fun to watch. You know, California Chrome, I think, will go down in history as one of the greatest horses we've ever seen, and it was fun to watch. I really wish Steve the best, and we all would have liked to see a Triple Crown. Even though, Alex, you didn't think it would happen, you were kind of against it, I would have loved to seen it. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
Just to say I've seen it in my lifetime.
The one problem, though, that I do have with what he said, although I generally do agree, is that although Tonalus was the one that was injured before, so it doesn't really speak in regards to him, California Chrome still finished fourth. It's not like he finished third or second to Tonalus. If Tonalus was the only horse that beat him, his quote would be taken in a totally different
context.
Well,
Wicked Strong was another horse.
There were three horses ahead of him.
Yeah, Wicked Strong was another one, and Wicked Strong skipped the Preakness. So I mean, that kind of adds to his fuel. You know what I mean? If you look at, you know, who beat him in this race, so you could go on and on about it. I thought it was it definitely was a great event to watch. Hopefully we see a horse in my lifetime before I die that wins the Triple Crown. But hey, you know, the other argument I saw, though, was that, you know, those who are against Steve's comments, they said in the past, you know, the previous Triple Crown winners, they had to go against horses that, you know, that hadn't competed in the first two legs of the whole Triple Crown race. But for me, looking at doing some research on that one, I didn't know that the field was significantly shorter compared to the amount of horses that race in the three races today. Like, it was, I mean, sometimes only like seven horses racing compared to, I don't know how many it is now, in the Preakness, in the Belmont Stakes, in the Kentucky Derby. So that's another thing that factors in when you talk about different time periods in horse racing. So there are many factors in this. Again, I'm like you, man. I liked his rant. I like what he had to say. And it really opened my eyes to that this was going on in the sport. So, hey, I want to get your thoughts on it, though. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. If you happen to catch this weekend's Belmont Stakes and had some thoughts on California Chrome coming just short of that Triple Crown dream. Well, you know, something else that took place this weekend, Matt, was the NBA Finals. You know, it was fun stuff to watch as the San Antonio Spurs just really, in my eyes, Matt, just kind of just let the game slip through their fingertips. And LeBron James and the Heat, they even the series now. It is now a 1-1 series. It was, you know, something else. Because first of all, before we dive into this, I want to say that LeBron James, you know, coming off of Crampgate, and all of the jokes and the fun and the, you know, just the low blows that he took over the past few days preparing for game two, LeBron James was fantastic yesterday. I mean, he is a guy who just does not let it amazes me throughout LeBron James' career, even going back to the undeniable hype that he had coming out of high school and whether or not he would live up to the hype. he just, you know, the pressure does not faze LeBron James. And if you can make fun of him all you want, you can poke fun at, you know, the antics, if you will. But he doesn't listen to it. He just goes out there and handles his business. And that's exactly what LBJ did yesterday. I thought he was fantastic because it was an interesting dynamic from first half LeBron to second half LeBron. In the first half, you had LeBron attacking the paint left and right. You could not stop him down there. Second half, you started to see him free up with his jump shot a little bit. He killed you in multiple areas. And again, if LeBron's going to get his. In a game like this, coming off, you know, what happened off a loss. I mean, the Miami Heat have not lost back-to-back games in the playoff run throughout the Big 3 era. They have not gone 0-2, gone down 0-2 and you know, throughout the entire Big 3 area in the playoffs. So it was inevitable that, you know, I think the Heat were going to pull this one out. Now, the Spurs, really, though, they had this game, I thought, Matt. Looking at the first half for me, they had a chance when Miami were, they had a terrible, terrible first half defensively for the Heat. The Spurs did not step on the throat and close the deal out. And a lot of it had to do with just turnovers. I mean, turnovers down the stretch in that first half, they just kept giving the ball back to Miami. And Miami took advantage of those turnovers and started to score off those. And also, if you go back to that key moment for me, when Chalmers got the flagrant foul on Tony Parker, if you remember after that moment, the Spurs had a chance to go to the line and try to extend that lead a little bit. They go to the line and miss not one, not two, not three, but four free throws? Come on. I just shook my head throughout the entire stretch and said, they're trying to get this game away, it looked like to me. But in the end, though, the Heat did what they needed to do.
Yeah, four free throws and you know, two by Duncan and two by Parker.
Yes. Yes,
and,
your leaders.
And we're not hearing headline after headline saying that they're not clutch. Mm-hmm. And that they're failures and that they're not good in big time moments.
Yeah, let that be LeBron, right?
It's just so crazy that LeBron is constantly under the microscope of scrutiny that he is. I mean,
yep.
And it's no surprise that he comes out and dominates game two. I mean, I think everybody saw that coming, especially after the way game one ended and all the stuff that he had to endure over social media and, you know, ESPN and all this stuff. You knew he was going to come out and play well. It's just tough. Both teams in either game, you know, the Heat in game one and the Spurs in game two can definitely feel like they gave one away. And both teams can. And that's why it's going to be such a compelling series going forward, because both these, they're so evenly matched. I mean, both teams are great, and little mistakes, missing free throws, sloppy turnovers, not grabbing rebounds, not boxing out, they come back to bite you, because these teams are so good and so even that the littlest mistakes loom large in the overall scheme of things. It's crazy.
And I always say in the finals, whether it be in any sport, in a championship series, no matter what sport it is, your little mistakes are magnified times 100. Because those little things, you know, if you're going against a formidable opponent, this is the best of the best. Those little things turn out to be big things. And that's exactly what's happened these past two games. And the Spurs, for me, Matt, and I've always said this, if you want to beat the Heat, you got to get buckets in the paint. How in the world does Tiago Splitter only have 2 points? Only 2 points throughout that entire game? Are you kidding me? And that's your starting center? That cannot happen. If Tiago goes out there and puts up that amount of points each and every game throughout this series, you might as well hand the championship to the Heat. I mean, it's ridiculous. Kawhi Leonard, stay out of foul trouble, my brother. My goodness. I mean, when Kawhi, you know, looking at last year, Kawhi was so great, and he was a kind of a breakout kid. I'm like, this kid has a bright future. He had a fantastic season with the Spurs, has been great up until this point in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard, when he's on the court, he's great. I love the kid. I mean, he's really the only guy who I think can have a chance at guarding LeBron James. You started to really see things fall apart when Kawhi got in foul trouble and Boris Diaw, of all people, tried to guard LeBron James. Come on. I mean, that once I saw that, I'm sitting there like, oh, well, the Heat are about to run away with this thing. Ginobili, I thought, was fantastic, but he had three costly turnovers. The one that really stuck out in my brain to this point right now is when, if you remember, Ginobili late in the game, about 3 minutes left, he gets double-teamed high. He dribbles out the double team, sees Duncan coming off the pick and roll, because Duncan came instead of pick and roll, and he throws it to Duncan in just an errant pass that flies off his, I mean, it was like a Brett Favre bullet to his chest. You had to really have hands of gold to catch the ball. I'm saying, like, really? I mean, he did it like three times. Just exact plays where I just did not know what Ginobili was thinking, and he just threw the ball away. And like you said, it's those little things, man. After he threw it away, LeBron, what happens down the floor? LeBron comes down and scores right then and there. I mean, that's the thing that the Heat did well. When the Spurs had those costly turnovers, the Heat capitalized off of him. And not to mention, how about Chris Bosh coming up big with the three-pointer and also the dish off to Dwayne Wade down low late? Hey, it's going to be an interesting series. I'm still, you know, this is going to be a bit back and forth, tit for tat type of series. Again, I think Spurs are going to win in seven, though.
Yeah, I think there's no way it's less than six games. It's going to go six or seven, probably seven. And, you know, talk about scrutiny. Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
Has there ever been another player who has had that level of hatred from America and probably the world in terms of sports fans as Chris Bosh? And for him to just kind of fly under the radar and come up big when they need him is huge.
I
think he's become underrated. You know, he was overrated probably in his days in Toronto. At least that's what I thought personally.
No, I did.
Now I think he's underrated because he is still a great player. And people just laugh him off as, you know, it's the big two and then Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh is a great player. And he comes up big for the Heat more often than not.
Yep.
It's going to be amazing to see how the series unfolds, see if Wade can kind of get back, because he struggled last night.
He did.
I mean,
he
had the game-sealing layup, but he didn't play his best ball.
Right.
Ginobili, the turnovers, that's just Ginobili.
Yeah.
That's
so
his
crazy.
You just kind of take the good and the bad, and that's the bad. Occasionally, he is a little off, and he'll make some real head-scratching turnovers, but going forward, the Spurs, like you said, they got to get guys going inside. They have a size advantage when they play Splitter and Duncan.
They do.
But Splitter has to be effective because he's not good to cover guys on the outside. That's why Bosh is such a game changer, because he has three-point range. So if you're going to be in the game, pound the ball inside and make Miami pay for going small. Because Boris Diaw, like you said, he can't cover LeBron. He's way too slow. He's big enough to maybe, you know, bat him around in the post, not quick enough to stay with
perimeter. That's what makes, you know, Leonard's value so crazy.
He can do everything.
Crazy. Yeah, exactly. He can do so much, man. All right. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk about the NHL playoffs. It's also Monday, and that means pick a Monday, ladies and gents. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, let's talk a little hockey. Yes, the NHL finals are in full effect, and the LA Kings have taken a 2-0 series lead.
Kopitar gets the puck. Twisting and turning to the blue line. Mitchell shot. Scores! Another comeback for the Los Angeles Kings. Behind by two, they win by one in double OT.
Yeah, don't call it deja vu. It's happened again, folks. The Rangers had a two-goal lead and again just allow LA to salvage all sorts of momentum and to close out the game in overtime. It seemed like deja vu, folks. And it really, looking at this game, guys, what really stood out to me in this game was how many goals that were scored. I mean, it was, 4-4 in that overtime, you know, before things ended. I sat there, because I tuned into the game in overtime, actually, glued to the television to see who would win, and I'm sitting there like, 4-4? I mean, these are supposed to be two of the premier goalies in the NHL, and they gave up four goals on both sides? That blew my mind. And then looking at, again, the fact that New York, it seemed as though they have the game, and they just go brain dead, it seems like. And then L.A. just able to just run away with the thing. I couldn't believe it, man.
Yeah, you have to give the Kings credit for just sticking with it. And that's been their whole playoff run to this point. I mean, they've been down and out more often than not and found a way to come back and win series after series. But really, the takeaway for me, coming into the series, I thought the Kings were going to run away with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really impressed with how good the Rangers are. Because, I mean, people might say, well, the only reason they're in the Stanley Cup Finals is because Carey Price got hurt for the Canadiens, so they got by that series. But they've come out, and they've shown that they belong in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Right.
They are giving L.A. all they can handle, obviously. I thought L.A. was going to win going away, but they've been in two dogfights at home. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the series shifts to New York tonight. I think the Rangers get at least one.
Yeah.
I still think the Kings will win, but the Rangers are every bit as deserving to be in the Stanley Cup Finals as the Kings are. So hats off to the Rangers, even with two losses.
Yeah, to force those overtimes and the way they've been able to do it, you definitely got to tip their hat. It's just amazing that, I mean, you know, when they've had these leads, I've just how quickly they've collapsed. That's really been the thing for me. It just really stood out. Alex?
Yeah, for the Kings, like we talked about at the beginning, on paper, they're the better team. But as much as four goals, Al, and you bring that up, and that's a great point with two premier goaltenders, when it comes to the NHL playoffs, Al, these goals aren't necessarily all breakaways. There are a lot of tip-ins, a lot of goals that you can't control as a goalie. You saw a couple the other night. Don't look too much into how many goals were let up. Just it's all about the bounces and getting the puck at the net and grinding, as what the Kings especially are just great at. So don't look too much into the goalies. It's just the way the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, and I will say though, in overtime, I mean, though they went at it. Those two goalies did go at it. I mean, they may have gave up a lot of goals throughout regulation, but in overtime, I mean, if you look at it, Lundqvist had 39 saves for New York. And Quick had 34 for L.A. Both goalies had a handful of stellar OT stops that I thought came really close to just ending the whole thing. So it was fun to watch. You got to love OT hockey, guys. Really quick, we got 3 minutes left, guys. Are the Tigers out of the slump now?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, you beat Boston. That's a great team. At Fenway, you know. They were home. But
they were at home, yeah.
Still, I mean, as much as, yeah, we'll see what happens with the division. Blue Jays, and although the Red Sox have a losing record, they'll probably squeeze their way into challenging the Blue Jays or whoever's at the division when it comes to October. But, I mean, it seems like the pitching got a little bit better this weekend. Although, yesterday, we saw very iffy pitches from Jova Chamberlain. Yeah. But don't look too far into that, because the Red Sox have Chamberlain's number. I mean, they've been facing Chamberlain for years.
Yeah, and I think that overall, I just think, right now, guys, it's a big question mark for me. I don't know where I'm uncertain right now with the Tigers. I don't know. I don't want to say they're out of the slump. I don't want to say they're still in the slump. I don't know. I just don't know. Looking at, you know, it's great they get a series win. That'll do great confidence-wise, but I could see them collapsing, you know, in this series in Chicago. I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't know. Still, they're having problems at the later part of that lineup right now. That later part of that lineup can't get hits. And again, the bullpen. You know, Joe Nathan didn't play, and they brought in Jova Chamberlain, and you saw what happened. David Ortiz sends one in the right field. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm a question
mark. But that was like the guy that Ortiz wanted to face at that time.
I just don't. I, for me, question
any
mark.
Other, any, others, any other team, I'd be fine with. It's the Red Sox and Jova Chamberlain versus Ortiz. That was like the worst situation you could have asked for.
Right now, the Tigers in the ninth inning, you can't depend on them right now. I don't know. Matt?
Keep things interesting.
Yeah.
And I think we might have all been ready to declare the slump dead had they won last night, too.
Right.
But, you know, like a horror movie villain where you think they're dead and they stick the hand out and they grab your leg.
Like a Game of Thrones.
And they pull you right back in. Moment. That's just what the bullpen does this year. I think this week is going to be telling. If they keep things rolling and take three from the White Sox, I think we can put this thing to bed once and for all.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, hopefully. As always in baseball, though, we seek patterns that we just shouldn't sometimes. So we'll see. We'll see. All right. Thanks so much for listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE's Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic start to your week. It's Monday, folks. Make it a good one. Make it a productive one. And as always, be easy, people.